exactly the same. It's based off of a couple of blog posts that I did that people found, you know, kind of useful, so I thought I'd turn it into a talk. I have a huge amount to cover. I've got like 60-something slides to cover in 60 minutes. I am going to kill you with a little bit of death by PowerPoint, my apologies. But my one goal for this talk is for you guys to take away one thing, just one thing. It doesn't have to be a big thing, just one little thing. So a few questions before I start. Who here has an AD and is a domain administrator? Yay, lots of hands. Next question, who here is a manager? Few hands, great. We need you guys because the stuff that I'm going to be showing you here, the DAs are going to have to put it in place, but we need your support in order to sell it to the business to say, this is why we need to do it. So thank you for coming along. So I'm going to start with the security stuff, which is like super scary, and then move on to the fluffy admin and maintenance stuff a little bit later. So 2 years ago in my organisation, we had an Active Directory security audit done. Now, if none of you have had that done, it is terrifying. You get a massive report with lots of red and all the stuff that's broken. So one of the things that got brought up in that was called Pass the Hash. Now, I'm hoping some of you have heard of it, and if you haven't, I'll give you a brief gist of what it is. Now, I'm not a security expert. I'm a sysadmin. If you want to see a security expert, go and chat to Jessica Payne. She is a security expert. So the basic gist, credentials are obtained, and then you get the hash of the password, not the clear text, just the hash, and using those two things, you can then jump from machine to machine depending on the rights of the account you've got. So you can get the credentials for a normal account, you can get the credentials for a server account, you can get the credentials for a domain admin account, and at that point, it's pretty much game over. If an attacker's got domain admin, you're kind of screwed. So it's also really easy to get the clear text password. So I've tried this out on a couple of my machines back at work, much to the dismay of my colleagues, and I've been able to get clear text passwords really easily. Now there are PowerShell scripts out there that can do it. There are executables that you can run via PSExec. Mimikatz is kind of scary. So it's really easy to do. So the whole idea of this section is to give you a few things to minimize the attack surface of your Active Directory. Now, it's not an exhaustive list. This is just a few things that I've found that we've put in place in my organization. It's a good start. It's something that you can go back and do straight away. Now, some of them are common sense, but I'm really sorry. We as sysadmins are really crap at common sense. So, your accounts. Your account security is really critical. Now, this includes things like keeping an eye on your admin accounts, learning how to use your accounts correctly, knowing how to manage your accounts securely, and knowing what your accounts are for. Now, you'll notice that I said accounts plural. So we all have a normal account. This is the day-to-day boring account that we use to log on, check our email, surf the web, all that kind of stuff. How many of you, and I want a show of hands, how many of you have local administrative rights on your PC using that normal account? I'm seeing lots of me. Do any of those accounts also have admin rights on servers? I'm not seeing any hands, and I'm guessing some of you are lying right now. What about domain admin accounts? I'm guessing no one's going to put their hand up and go, there's no way I would do that. Next one is shared credentials. So does anyone have an admin account that's in their organization that everyone has the username and password for? Yeah, I see you nodding. So it really does suck because who wants more passwords that they have to change? But we really do need more than one account, particularly if we're a DA. So if you're a DA, you need four accounts. So what are they for? So you've got your normal account, your boring account, standard day-to-day account, as I said, you browse the internet, you check your email, all that kind of stuff. Now, this is exactly the same as every other user in your organization. It has no special rights, no special privileges. It does not have admin rights to anything. Then you've got your desktop admin account, because chances are, even if you're a server admin, there's a good chance you've still got some desktop admin responsibilities on your plate. So this account not only has local admin rights on your machine, but it may also have local admin rights on other people's PCs. Then you've got your server admin account. So this account is probably the one you'll use the most if you're a server admin. So this lets you do server admin-y things. We're talking group additions in AD, we're talking modifying your group policies, we're talking changing your collection groups in SCCM and modifying your monitoring in SCOM, that kind of stuff. It's only used for server stuff. Then you have your domain admin account. Now, this is the big mama of all of your accounts, and it is only used for domain admin things. So I'm talking adding and removing domain controllers, schema changes, FSMO role shifts, things that only require a domain administrator to do. Now, as I'm not a security expert, I'm not going to go, you have to have all four. Sometimes it's a little bit hard. In my organization, it took me 2.5 years just to get 3 accounts implemented. So if you can't do the four, please make sure that your normal user account and your domain admin account are separated. That's probably the biggest one that you can take away, because you don't want your domain admin account being the same as your standard user account, because ever. Domain admin accounts never log on to workstations or servers, ever. They are only used for accessing domain controllers and doing domain admin-y things. I cannot emphasize this part enough. So in regards to the pass the hash that I spoke about before, if someone is able to attack your local PC, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, they will be able to obtain your DA account, and then they've got domain admins, and it's game over. So, never on workstations, never on servers, just domain controllers. AD delegation, woo! So AD delegation is a wonderful thing. So it means that you can make organizational units and specify who has access to those organizational units, which is really cool. So in regards to those 4 accounts that I told you about before, you probably got them split up into individual groups, normal, desktop admin, server admin, your domain admins. So for this, you can then put them into their own OUs, and then you can specify who has access to do stuff to those accounts. Really good example of this. In my organization, we have hundreds of domain desktop admins, hundreds of them. And sometimes we don't want to be the ones who have to reset the passwords on them. It can get really annoying. So we've delegated access to our help desk to be able to reset passwords on those accounts. However, you probably don't want your help desk being able to do that to your server accounts, and you definitely don't want them being able to do that to your domain admin accounts. So securing them gives you just that extra level of protection. It's an extra little barrier that you put in front of them. Now, this one should be pretty obvious. The whole idea is to limit the scope of a compromised account. So you want to keep accounts out of groups that can do damage. These are the big ones, so the schema admins and your enterprise admins. So the aim for this is to keep these groups empty, and I mean literally empty, no users in them whatsoever. If you need to be a schema admin, it's a simple process to promote yourself into that, do what you need to do, and then take yourself back out of it. So it's good practice, it's Microsoft recommended, and it really is plain common sense in the idea of least privilege and all that stuff. Now, how many is too many? Because not everyone needs to be a domain administrator. So a slight story here. I was recently decommissioning a Server 2003 domain, and we won't even get me started on decommissioning Server 2003 machines, because we could be here for hours with me yelling at you. So in that domain, I thought, while I'm decommissioning it, I'll check and see how many domain admins there were. There were 60. Not 16, 60. There is no way that many people needed to be domain admins in this domain. It's not feasible. It's not possible. So check your domain admins and see who's a member. So a few questions. Who here knows if they've got the default administrator account still in their domain admins account, in their domain admins group? No one? Few people. Good. Next one, and I know there will be hands here, so you can't lie. Who here has service accounts in their domain admins group? Yes, I'm seeing lots of hands. That doesn't have to happen. So you want to limit your domain admins to who actually needs it. Service accounts do not need it. Come on, people. We should know this by now. So if your accounts have been set up correctly, if you've delegated the access properly, there should be very few domain admins. Now, there's no hard and fast rule on how many is too many. It's dependent on your organization, it's dependent on the number of users you have, how big your domain is, how many people's in your IT ops group. It really is up to you. However, there's a few things that you should probably follow. Your help desk staff probably don't need to be domain admin. They don't. There's a good chance that not even everyone in your IT ops group need to be domain admin. So in my organization, there's 150 IT ops staff. That's a lot of people. They don't need to be DA. Not even everyone in your identity team needs to be a domain admin. So my identity team has 14 people in it, and only 9 of us are domain admins. The other 5, I feel a little sorry for them, but they don't need to be domain admin. So Microsoft did recently change the best practice in regards to this, like a week ago, thanks Microsoft, and they said that probably no one needs to be in the domain admins group, so hopefully you went to Oren Thomas's session before mine that was about just in time and just enough administration. That's going to be coming out with Server 2016 and can do some really cool stuff. So next time when I give this talk, this will all change. Now, password management and security, they go hand in hand with account security. One is not secure if the other isn't secure. So it's not something that we as sysadmins do very well. So we are appallingly bad at maintaining our passwords and doing the right things in regards to this. We do the wrong things, usually in the name of expediency. You need to fix this thing right now. We need to get it working. I'm just going to set the password so that it never expires and it'll be fine. I'll go back and fix it up later. Who here actually goes back and fixes them up later? No one. I reckon you're lying. No one goes back and fixes it. No one does. So these are a few things that we should be doing with our passwords. Now, this one's really dumb. I didn't think this needed to be said, but the last time I gave this talk over in Australia, just before I gave it, like the day before, I read a report that came out, a news article, that said a security audit was performed over in Western Australia. And the security auditors were able to get into the system on the first go, because they were able to guess the password. Can anyone guess what the password was for the account that they got in with? Password! Please don't use the defaults. I realise it's common sense. I realise it's dumb. It goes along with don't use the obvious, so things like admin in admin accounts, root for root accounts, SQL on SQL accounts, that kind of stuff. Get it out. Now, I know a lot of you are going, well, I would never do that. We inherit environments. So a lot of the time you've come into an organisation and you haven't set everything up. I guarantee you, if you go back to your organisation and go into your password vault, you should have a password vault, you should go into your password vault and check, you will find an account that has a default admin password set somewhere. Get rid of it, blow it away, give it something that isn't the default. Now, I know a number of admins who do this. They'd never admit it, but they do, and I won't ask for a show of hands. So they have those 4 distinct accounts I mentioned, and when the password changes on one, they go and change the password on all the others to match, which is really, really dumb. So if you have a naming convention in your organisation, which most of us will, it's what we're supposed to do, if someone gets access to my Jess account, they're going to go, there's a Jess underscore DA account. I might try the hash that I've got of that password against that account as well and see if it works. Don't use the same password on all of your accounts. Please, just don't do it. This also goes for your service accounts. So if you have service accounts, don't use the same password for them. Make them unique, make them long, make them hideous, make them disgusting that no one will ever remember. We're talking 30 characters that's been generated in some form of password generator. We all use some form of password generator or password storing system. They have password generators in them. Make it absolutely ugly. No one will remember it. Now this includes, in regards to using the same password, this includes your accounts in your organisation and online. Don't use the same passwords for any accounts you have in your organisation for online accounts. Make sure they are totally separate. The reason for this comes about because of, we've all seen that, does everyone here know who Troy Hunt is? Some of you do. So there is a Have I Been Pwned? I highly recommend signing up for it. It's awesome. You get emails all the time telling you about online accounts of yours that have been leaked in some form of password leakage. So if you've got your organisation accounts also being used, the passwords for them also being used for your online accounts, they're going to get owned at some point. It's just a given. It will happen. LastPass got owned. So please don't use any of your organisational passwords for any online accounts. Now, I'm not just talking about your user accounts or even your admin accounts. I'm talking service accounts, temp accounts, training accounts, guest accounts, shared accounts. Every account in your organisation should have a password expiry on it. It's really easy to check. There is a PowerShell script out there. You run it, it spits out, and it will spit out a really long list of accounts that don't have a password expiry set. We have ways to manage password expiry now. There is no need for you to have passwords in your environment that haven't been changed for 5 or 10 or 15 years, as one that I found recently. Service accounts, they are a little tricky. We had some issues with them in the past, but now that we have managed service accounts and group managed service accounts, it is possible. So make sure every account in your environment has password expiry set. Now, a lot of organisations have a policy in place that say if we get our users to change their passwords more frequently, it makes them more secure. This is not the case. I think this is wrong. Security experts agree with me. When users change their passwords super frequently, they're going to do something to make it insecure. They're going to add a digit on the end. They're going to reuse passwords. Or my personal favourite. How many of you have gone into an office and found a post-it note stuck to a monitor or under a keyboard? Hands? I'm pretty sure everyone has. Post-it note password storage is not a secure way of storing passwords. So the best practice has shifted recently, which is really good. So the whole idea is that we have a recommended longer password, longer minimum. So around 14 characters is Microsoft's best practice at the moment. And because we're having longer passwords, we then have a longer time between the password changes. It makes a lot of sense. Now, I have been saying passwords, and I will continue to say passwords because it's what I know and what I grew up on, but we should be using the word passphrase. So the whole idea is to get away from a single word and using phrases. That's great, hence the comic, XKCD. Love this comic. However, there is a caveat with this one. Don't use easily guessable phrases. I'm talking lines from books, lines from movies, song lyrics, whatever. Don't use them. They are easily guessed. So there's a link that I put up there. Feel free to take a photo of it or download this slide deck when it's available. Try it out with not your actual password. Never do that, please. But try it out with a password that you may want to use in some case. So it will be able to predict the next character in your password. I've done this, and I think I used a 20 or 24 character line, and it guessed like 17 of the characters. Really scary. So don't use easily predicted password phrases. So what's better than one password policy? Lots of password policies. I love fine-grained password policies. I have implemented all of the ones in my organisation because, you know, I'm OCD and nuts. The whole idea of this is that you can change the password policy for a specific group. So rather than having the same password policy for everyone using the default domain password policy, you can then say, well, no, I'd actually like them to have a different password policy. An example, you may decide your domain admins should have a slightly secure password policy. Rather than having a 14-character, you may want them to have a 20-character password. But because they've got a 20-character password, and they're probably not going to be using it very much because they're not logging into workstations or servers, we're going to give them a bit of a longer time on it. So we might make it up to 6 months or something like that instead. Now, another one that's really cool with this is an example from my organisation that's awful. We have an application in our organisation that says you can have an 8-character password. 8 characters, no more, no less. That's it, 8 characters. This is awful because what they've done is made the default domain an 8-character password. That's not very good. So with fine-grained password policies, we're then able to say, well, not everyone's a user of that application. We're going to put all the users of that application into a group, and then we're going to apply the fine-grained password policy just to that group, to say only those users can have that 8-character password. Everyone else, 14 characters, those users, 8 characters. So you're not bringing everyone else down to the lowest common denominator. You're actually making your environment more secure and only dumbing it down for the people who actually need it. So the big one with this, and I know sysadmins, we are bad at this one, I'm sorry. Document the password policies. When your help desk staff go to reset a policy for some password for someone, they need to know what policy is being applied to that user. If user is a member of X group, they have Y policy applied to them. Make sure it is written down somewhere. Now, I am still surprised by the number of times that I see this. Storing your passwords in group policies is really scary because it is really easy to access. So it's stored in a central location up in your SysVol that every PC and every user can pretty much access. Now, Microsoft have prevented you from being able to do this. There was a patch that came out in May 2014, I believe it was, that prevented you from being able to do this. However, if you put them in, they will still be there. So go back, check and see if you have any passwords stored in your group policy preferences that are set up in this area. You don't want them to be there at all. They are so easy to get a hold of. Everyone here will have come across that one user who likes to tinker and likes to play around and likes to break things because they can. These are the kind of users who will go, hey, I can get a hold of that, and I know that the encryption key for that is actually publicly available. So they'll go off and grab the encryption key and unencrypt the password, and then they have, I'm guaranteeing, some form of admin account. Because if you're putting it in group policies, chances are it's doing something admin-y. It's installing something. It's running a script. Whatever it's doing, you don't want users to have access to that account. So get them out of your group policy preferences. Also, don't store them in your group policy object scripts, please. No one should be running scripts. Hopefully you went to Alan's session yesterday. Don't run group policy scripts, please. But if you do have them in there, get your passwords out of them, because they are in clear text. So anyone can grab them. Now, this used to be unwieldy in environments, particularly in larger ones, because who really wants to have to change the password on multiple machines, particularly when you've got hundreds or thousands? But hopefully you guys have heard of LAPS. Now, LAPS is Local Administrator Password Solution. It's a Microsoft tool, and it provides you the ability to be able to reset an individual local account on a domain machine to be totally unique and random. So you want to use this for whatever account you're using on all of your workstations and all of your servers. So we've recently rolled this out in my organization to about 700 servers. So every server has its own unique administrative password. Now that's stored up in Active Directory. It's secured up there in an object and you specify who has access to it. So only certain people can view that attribute. It's really awesome. If you haven't looked at this, I recommend going back and looking at it as soon as possible. It is awesome. Now, even with your password still randomized, you want to prevent local administrative accounts from being able to remotely access other machines. So the whole idea is to prevent the scope of an attack. So if someone gets into one of your machines, they can't traverse across your entire network. Now, in Server 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1, two new SIDs were introduced. So these SIDs said, user is a local account, or user is a local account and a member of the administrators group. So you can now specify using user rights assignment that that user is denied logon remotely and denied access via RDP. So you can say no local administrators accounts can traverse across your network. You can do it with your local admin, just your local accounts if you want to. That will break things. So we found that with clustering, it doesn't like it when you do that. So don't do it on all of your local accounts. Just do it for your local admin accounts. Now, server security is really important because your Active Directory is really only as strong as its weakest link, and your servers are prime targets. I mean, if someone's going to come into your environment, one of the things they're going to do is try and get onto some kind of server to be able to then do nasty things. So you want to make sure your servers are as secure as possible. This one's pretty obvious. Everyone patches, right? Every month, yes? Everyone nod, just say yes, it's fine. WSUS is your friend, seriously, it's wonderful. So Microsoft does bring out security and critical patches every month. You want to patch your boxes, you want to patch your servers, patch your workstations, whatever. Just patch everything to make sure they are up to date and secure. Now, Microsoft have made it a little bit easier just recently, much to the grumbling of some of the people in my organization, because they've done their roll-ups. I think it's awesome, there's only one patch, that's great. This isn't just for your servers as well, though. You want to patch your domain controllers, too. One big caveat with that, if you're going to patch your domain controllers, don't do them all at once and take the entire domain out and then bring it all back online. Not good. Do them staggered. Do them on odd days. So in my environment, I've got 6 domain controllers. 2 get done on Monday, 1 on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Staggers it across, and if we have problems, we've caught it early. Now, not everyone needs to remote to everything. Your network admins probably don't need to access your SCCM servers. Your hardware admins probably don't need to access your domain controllers. Limit who can remote to what. So you can do this by subnets, you can do it via IP, do it however you want. Just make sure that you're limiting who can remote into what of your servers. If you're a small organization, chances are you're probably wearing multiple hats. That's fine. You can probably want to remote to everything. If you're in a large organization like me, you probably don't want your SCCM admins going anywhere near your file servers. So make sure that you've set this up. Limit who can remote to what. Now, this is the opposite of the no domain admins on workstations, which is the only domain admins on domain controllers. And it does seem kind of obvious. However, who has access to your data centers and your physical servers? What about your virtual infrastructure? So if you're running your domain controllers, who has access to the virtual hard drives of those machines? Is it just domain admins? If it's not, they technically have domain admin. If you have physical access to a domain controller, you have domain admin rights. If you can break into that box, it's fine. So the whole idea of this is to keep an eye on who has access to what. If someone has physical access to your domain controllers, make sure they are someone you would trust with domain admin rights. Any of your virtual infrastructure guys, if they are not domain admins, you want to make sure you would trust them with that. I wouldn't trust mine, but that's fine. So if you have physical domain controllers in a data center that you don't control, you want to make sure you've locked it up in some way so that people can't access it. No one can physically get a hold of your machine. You want to evaluate who needs access into your domain. So with trust, there's a few things at play here. Does everyone in the entire domain or forest need access to your domain? Or can you use selective authentication to limit who is coming in? So in some cases, you've only got a trust in place because only a few people are coming in to do some small finance stuff or whatever. Not everyone in that domain then needs access. So use selective authentication to limit that down. Another question that you want to be posing regularly, is the trust still required? If you don't know what it's for, make it go away. Now, maybe you're not sure what you need to fix up. You're not sure what group policies are in place or how secure your environment is. SCM, so Security Compliance Manager, it is your new bestest friend. So this will let you go through and analyse your group policies and work out what's in place and what goes against the Microsoft baselines and where you kind of sit. It's a really cool tool. Now, it also allows you to create a configuration for, say, some of your standalone machines. So not everything is connected to a domain. You might have things out in the DMZ that you don't want connected to a domain. So this allows you to create a configuration inside SCM that you can then deploy out. Now, you can do it via Desired Configuration Manager. You can do it via PowerShell, however you want to do it. It just means that you have a set configuration that you're going to use on all those machines and you know it's going to be the same. Now, this is useful on servers, but it's also really handy for your workstations. And speaking of workstations, provided you have put in place all the other security measures, you've limited who can RDP to things, you're mitigating your pass the hash, you're fixing up your GPOs in SCM, all that kind of stuff, your workstations should need very little love. So there's only one slide for this section, and it's a little bit controversial, and I'm not sure how many organizations would look at doing it. An admin workstation is not equal to a user workstation. So this is a really tough one. We're looking at it. We still haven't implemented it. We are trying. The whole idea of this is to have, as an administrator, to have two workstations. So one is your admin workstation. Now, this is a super secure workstation. It's BitLockered. You don't know the admin password. It's been given an admin password and thrown away. It's got its policies applied that are super secure. It's getting its patches straight away. It only has the tools you need to do admin stuff on it, and you can't install squat on it. It is a locked down box. Then you have your user workstation, and this is the fluffy one that you get to do, surf the internet, and browse YouTube, and check Facebook, and all that kind of stuff on. You want to keep the two separate, but you don't have to make them both physical. Your admin workstation can be a physical workstation, and your user workstation can be a virtual machine if you want to do it. So you can store your user workstation on your admin workstation and do it that way. Don't think about doing it the other way around. The whole idea of this is to limit where you are putting your password. You don't want to be putting your domain admin account password into an insecure workstation. And this is the only workstation in the world that breaks the no domain admins on workstations rule. The whole idea of this workstation is that you are using your domain admin and server admin credentials on it. So you want to limit what keyboard you are putting it into. So an admin workstation is super secure, so you can feel comfortable putting your admin password into it. Don't think about doing it the other way around. It totally defeats the purpose of doing it. So if you do it the other way, you are still putting your credentials into an insecure box. Admin workstation physical, user workstation virtual. So now that I've terrified you with some of the security stuff you have to go back and fix, and I guarantee you, you will have at least one thing there you have to go back and fix, we can now move on to the really fluffy admin and maintenance side of things. So as I mentioned, this isn't just about writing the right rights, it's about getting things right and making sure they stay right. So we had a roles and knowledge management engagement done in my organisation. That's where Microsoft come in and they go, this is where your boundaries are. So this is who looks after this lot of stuff and this is who looks after that lot of stuff and never the twain shall meet. And these are the things you need to do to make sure that things are working properly. All the admin stuff, all the maintenance, all the proactive work. And for Active Directory, holy crap, is there a lot you have to do. There is so much stuff, so many proactive things you need to be doing to make sure things are ticking over and working properly. Now, I'm not going to be able to get through absolutely everything they brought up in my RKM engagement. I'm only going to highlight a few things that we've implemented that we've found useful and helpful and have helped us avoid a few minor and in some cases not so minor disasters. So one other thing here, and I'm really sorry about this, I wanted to do demos of this. Now, I tried to break Active Directory in really cool ways. It's really hard to break AD in the way that I wanted it to. I went to a couple of organisations who I knew had broken ADs and said, can I take screenshots and do demos of yours? And they went, no, we don't want you to show that ours is broken, thank you very much. So unfortunately, I am killing you a little bit with death by PowerPoint. I'm really sorry. But I do have some screenshots of some of the outputs that you should see if things are working well, and hopefully everything is working well in your environment because you're looking after it. Now, you don't need to write down any of these commands. There will be a link at the end that links off to my blog, and I like it when people go look at my blog. So you can go there and grab all the commands that you need. So don't worry about taking photos or any of that kind of stuff. So, whole lot of stuff to get through, so I am going to have to move really, really quickly. So I won't be able to spend too much time in detail on them, so if you want more information, feel free to come and grab me afterwards. I'm not that scary, I promise. So some of these can be incorporated into a script if you want to do that. I'm going to make an admission here in front of all of you. I am not a scripter. I can't code. Many keyboards died to bring us this information. I have killed so many keyboards trying to program, it's just not funny. Now, I'm sure you are all much better at this than I am, so chances are you'll be able to take these, take them back to your organisation and put them into a script and it'll be awesome. We have a script in my environment. I didn't write it, so I'm not allowed to share it because he's a little bit, you know, protective of his scripts. That's fine. There is PowerShell that can be used for some of these as well. However, if I've got a choice between get-ad replication blah or repadmin, I'm a sysadmin and lazy. I'm going to type the short command. So I'm sure there are PowerShell commands that you could use. If you want to use them, that's great. Put them in your scripts. That's awesome. I'm going to go with the less typing method. So some of these are not PowerShell scripts. So this is about in-house on-premises. Please, please don't say on-premise. It will make everyone cranky. So it's on-premises Active Directory. So with on-premises Active Directory, replication is critical. Now, I'm hoping I see no hands. Who here has only one domain controller in their environment? No one? No one? Awesome. You need at least two, at least for redundancy. If you want to patch them, you want to be able to take them down, or if something, you know, the proverbial crap hits the fan, you want to make sure that you've at least got some redundancy. Make sure you've got at least two. So if you've got two, you want to make sure they're replicating, because if they're not replicating, things are going to get broken out of sync really quickly. So this is to make sure that your replication is occurring quickly and successfully. Repadmin is your new best friend. So this one here, it's a high-level check. It monitors your whole domain or your forest. It contacts every domain controller in the forest and collects some information about it. So the example displayed up here, it's really good. There's no errors. There's no fails. This is awesome. Now, a few things to note with this one. You want to pay attention to the largest delta. So the largest delta is the amount of time between when it last replicated to its replication partners. You don't want this to be any longer than an hour. If it hasn't replicated in an hour, things are going to be going a little bit hinky because, you know, if someone changed their password and then they authenticate against a different domain controller, it's not going to work. So make sure this isn't greatly out. The other one is you don't want to see anything showing up in your errors. So if you see domain controllers showing up here in your errors, it probably means they're not contactable. You want to go and investigate that. Now, this is a check you can run fairly regularly. You can run it daily, you can run it weekly, depending on your environment. And you don't need to be a domain admin to run this one. You can run this one with your normal account and get this information quite fine. Now, this one shows the inbound replication status for all of the domain controllers in your domain and your forest. that have errors. Now, you'll notice the slash errors only. You can run it without the slash errors only. We only care when stuff's broken. If things are working, that's awesome, that's great. But we only want to see when stuff's broken. So the example that I'm showing up here, it's great. There's no errors. That's what you want to see. If you do see errors here, it is cause for investigation. It means something is broken. There's replication problems. You're going to want to delve a little bit further. If there is a known replication issue in your environment, this one's really handy to spot the errors that are causing it. Now, this one does require your domain admin account to be able to run. This one's really cool. So this shows the update sequence number on a source and destination domain controller. Now, the way this works is it's talking about the up-to-dateness vector, so that's the UTDVEC, and it shows the highest USN your domain controller has for that particular directory. So you want to use this to compare how current your domain controller is in comparison to its source partners. So this one's actually really good to do in line with the replication summary one that I showed at the beginning, because if you've got a longer, largest delta, so if your delta's out by quite a lot, you're talking 30 minutes, 45, up to an hour, the numbers you see here will be out by a greater amount. So you're not comparing between the two numbers. So up there you can see 23718 and 1842. You're not comparing between those. You're comparing between the 23718 and the 23710 that's further down. So as you can see there, that means there have been 8 changes to my domain in some fashion that haven't yet been replicated. 8's quite a small number, 8's fine. If this is out by thousands, stuff be broke, yo. You want to go and take a look at it. Something isn't working. So a couple of things that can do that, and I will raise my hand and say, I know I've done this. If you add lots of domain controllers all at once, this can grow quite massively to thousands. One of my admins was running this when I added in 6 new domain controllers all at once. Don't do that. I recommend not doing that. And it was out by thousands. And he came over and went, did you do something? Maybe. Sorry. So yeah, so pay attention to this one. If the USN is greatly out and you haven't done something like adding in multiple domain controllers, then something is going on. Something funky has happened. You want to look into it further. Now this one can be run with your normal account as well, so you don't have to be a DA to run it. Now, this lets you view the inbound replication request that a domain controller has pending to be on the same page with all of its other domain controller replication partners. So you want this to be zero, or if not zero, as low as physically possible. The higher the number here, the more out it's going to be, and that can be some massive issues. So it could mean you've got too many concurrent replication partners. It could mean that you've got a high change rate to objects. For an example, you have an identity management solution in your environment that's gone and reset the password on every account. That's going to show up here. Hardware-wise, it can also show errors here. So if you don't have sufficient CPU on your domain controllers, you might see issues here. And if you don't have enough bandwidth for the replication to be occurring, you might see some problems here. So it then gives you, you know, the impetus to go off to your hardware admins and go, hey, I actually need, you know, 4 CPUs on that, not the one you've given me. So this one does require your domain admin to run it as well. Now, this one lets you display any failed replication events that have been acknowledged by your KCC, so your knowledge consistency checker. So in the example I've got here, it says none. Now I've run this a number of times in my environment and I have never seen something show up here. And I promise you, our environment was pretty broken when I started running this. So you don't want to see failed replication events showing up here. If something shows up here, you want to investigate it. It is a symptom of a larger replication issue. Chances are, if you've run the other commands, it's shown up there. You're probably going to want to run the errors only one to be able to detect what is causing this to occur. So this one does require your domain admin account to run as well. And if something shows up here, something is very broken and you need to fix it. Now, your flexible single master operations roles. So these are incredibly important. They're the parts of AD that don't lend themselves to multi-master mode replication. They are roles that are held by one domain controller at a time. So I'm going to stand away from my notes because I'm going to remember this off the top of my head. So you've got domain naming, schema, PID, your RID master, your infrastructure master, and your PDCE. And I remembered that without looking at my notes. That's awesome. So you've got the 5 roles. It's really good to check to make sure that they stay consistent. You don't want them to just magically change on you. So this command lets you view who's holding what FISMO role in your domain. So a little bit off topic here. It's not a bad idea to share the love and split these up. You don't have to have them sitting on one domain controller. I'm a fan of splitting the enterprise scoped ones with the domain scoped ones. So as you can see, the schema and domain naming are on one domain controller and the RID infrastructure and PDCE are on another. That's kind of nice. That's how it's all set up in my environment. Kind of cool. Another side note with this one, if you need to move these roles, transfer them, don't seize them. Seizing is ugly, transferring is nice. It's a nice way of doing it. So when you're running this, document it, write it down, put it somewhere, wiki, your knowledge base, whatever. Make sure it's written down somewhere so that you know where these things are, so you can then check against it. Now you can run this fairly frequently if you want. You can run it as often as you like. Chances are it's not going to change unless you have a cowboy in your organisation who likes to screw with your OCD-ness and move them around on you. Yes, I've had that happen. So, run it. Document it, check it again, say every month, every 3 months, you'll be fine. Now this one can be run with your normal account as well. Now it is fairly well known that time synchronization is very important for domain controllers to function and for a domain in general to function. So if time is out on a domain controller, chances are communications in your domain is going to be really screwy. So you want to make sure that your time settings are set up correctly. So the following commands I have on the next couple of slides are what you need to do to set your domain controllers up to have the right time settings, and then how you go about checking to make sure that they stay correct. So, default time settings are your workstations, your member servers, and your non-PDCE domain controllers should all be getting their time from the PDCE. That's just the way it works. So, another slight story here, and I'm sure some of you have had this happen. Before I came into my organisation and fixed stuff, the NTP settings on my domain controllers were set to run off of their host because they're virtual and something screwed up with the host and I'm based in Brisbane, so everything went back 10 hours. That wasn't very good. Everything started breaking and everyone's like, I don't understand, why is it saying it's 1 o'clock in the morning? Fine. Make sure you have some form of outside NTP source that you're synchronizing against. Don't synchronize it against its own host. Bad idea. So, the first command here, you run that on your PDCE. So this is where you set it up to synchronize against an outside NTP source. If you can do it, Stratum 2. If you have access to a Stratum 1, even better, I'm a little bit jealous. The second command that's up there is what you run on your other domain controllers. So this tells them to go and synchronize against the PDCE. So this makes sure that everyone is all in synchronization with each other. You want everyone to be all lovey and huggy and getting all of their time from the one source. Now once you've run these, you will need to restart the Windows Time Service, so the W32TM service, and because you're doing that on a domain controller, you're going to need to be a domain admin to do it. So this lets you check the time settings on your domain controllers. Please, please go back and do this in your environments as soon as you get back. Make sure you're checking them. I had 7 or 8 domains in my environment. Not one of them was set up correctly when I ran this. Not one. We had domain controllers that were synchronizing off. Workstations, I'm not kidding there. I have no idea who set that up. We had domain controllers that were synchronizing off their host. That was really dumb. We had domain controllers synchronizing against NTP servers that they couldn't even access. I have no idea how they were getting their time. So go back, check this, make sure your stuff is set up correctly. So this one's safe to run as required. Chances are, unless you have a screwy coworker, they're not going to be changing this very often. So go back, run this, make sure everything's right, and then run it as frequently as you want. At the moment, I think we run this one about once every 3 months. So a slight side note in regards to this, because you know Microsoft likes throwing new things at us and making me change my talk. So Server 2016, when it comes out, it's got some new time sync awesomeness. So it's going to be way more accurate. It's been greatly improved. So the next time I give this talk, it's going to be slightly different and it's going to be awesome. So I'm really looking forward to playing with that one. Now, many organizations have trust. So they trust other domains. They could be development domains. They could be DMC domains, external production domains, other organizations. If you don't have trust in your environment, you can go and have a nap right now. A couple of minutes, it's fine. Check your email. Snark at me on Twitter. That's fine too. So you want to check to make sure that your trusts are set the way you expect them to be. So similar to your FISMO roles, this is the kind of thing that you want to run, document, and then check against. So you want to make sure there's no unexpected changes. You don't want to see random trusts appearing in this list. It's a little bit scary. I had that happen. Someone actually added in a trust to an external domain, and I'm like, where the hell did this come from? I don't understand. Why is there a trust? We don't trust anyone. This is really weird. If you set up a trust, make sure you add it to the list and document it and tell your other administrators about it. Because part of this as well is, if you don't know what it's for, get rid of it. So if someone hasn't told you, they might get rid of a trust that you actually need. So make sure you're checking this, make sure you document it. This one's safe to run every couple of months, maybe every 6. Just make sure that it's as you expect it to be. This one can be run with a normal account, so it doesn't require any special privileges. Now, like scripting, I get to get up in front of all of you and say, I don't get DNS at all. Like PKI, I find it voodoo. I seriously do. It's black magic, sacrifice a virgin, throw a pinch of salt over your shoulder, turn around 3 times and pray to God that it works. So, beside that, I do understand that DNS is kind of important for Active Directory to run, just a little bit. So, I am getting better. I have a few people in my organisation who are helping me understand it more. As part of the RKM stuff, we did actually get told a few things in regards to DNS and networking that we needed to keep an eye on. So ensuring that it's replicating properly, ensuring that it's not producing any errors, ensuring that all your sites and subnets are accounted for, it's all really important to make sure that DNS and the networking in your domain is functioning the way it should. Now, I really don't like this one because I hate running it in my environment because we run it every week because our network guys like just adding in random subnets because they can. So this command is really cool. So it allows you to scour through all the connections to your domain that have happened over a disgustingly long period of time, depending on how big your log is, and find any of the subnets that aren't listed in your sites and services. Now, the reason that this is really important is, and I'm going to use some examples because I'm Australian. Say I'm based in Brisbane, and I've got some users over here in Auckland, and I don't have their sites and subnets listed over in the domain controllers, so all the poor people in Auckland having to go all the way back over to Brisbane to access authentication via domain controller, to access file servers, to get to their SCCM distribution points, that's a lot of network traffic. You don't want that happening. So you want to make sure every subnet in your environment is documented in your sites and services. That's the whole idea of it. So this lets you pinpoint individual IP addresses that have connected into your environment that aren't listed in your sites and services. And you can then go off to your networking guys and go, hey, you added in another subnet. Can you please let me know when you do that? Because you've done this for the last 6 months in a row. Please tell me when you're doing this stuff. Now, I don't recommend running this one daily because there is a lot. If you're anything like ours, we get between, I'd say, 6 to 12 new subnets added every week. So it can be a really big log to have to go through. If you want to run it weekly, you can. If you're a smaller organisation, maybe run it once a month just to make sure that you've got everything. Now, this one does require domain admin to run because it's accessing a log, so you're going to need to be a DA to be able to get access to that. Now, this isn't an exhaustive list. This is just what we were told from our RKM engagement. We need to make sure that these ports are talking and are accessible and they're open to make sure that everything is working as intended. Now, I'm really sorry for my OCD friends that it's not in a port order. I know that makes me cringe a little bit as well, but it's grouped by functionality. So I am kind of sated a little bit in the way that this has been set up. So you want to make sure that your domain controllers have these ports open and are talking on them, and any networking equipment you have between your domain controllers, particularly if you've got multiple data centers and sites set up that have domain controllers at them, make sure your networking equipment has been set up to allow these through the firewalls. I love log monitoring. So log monitoring is something that I've noticed not a lot of organisations do very well. So how many people here have a central logging system? Some form of log repository. A few of you. We need more of you, please. So those people who had their hands up, how many of you push your Active Directory logs to your logging system? Yay! What about your system logs from your Active Directory? And your application log and your DNS log and your replication log. Yay, I'm seeing hands. That's awesome. That's what you want. So it's really important that you are putting that somewhere for you to be able to look at, because if something goes wrong, it's going to show up in some form of event log. Now, you can do this manually. There is EventComb MT, but if you have a lot of domain controllers, I've got like 30 in my environment, I'm not going to want to access each one of them individually. That's going to be a pain in the bum. You want to be able to do this in such a way that you can access them all at once and be able to do some correlation. Now, you can do it by PowerShell. As I mentioned, scripting is not very good for me. I like the usability of a logging system. You can use whatever works for you. So you can use Windows Event Forwarding, you can use Splunk, you can use an open source system like ELK. That's what I've got set up in my organization. So what you're doing is you want to keep an eye open for any errors or warnings that are coming from your domain controller system logs. So these are mini red flags, and the five that I've got up here were the five big ones that we were warned about. I shouldn't need to go into much detail about them. They really do speak for themselves. If you see one of these in your system log, something is broken. It's not working. You need to fix it. So check your system log. Go back, take a look, see if you have any of these. If you do, fix it up, please. You want to keep an eye on your DNS event log. So any errors, any warnings that show up, they're really important. But these three in particular, really bad. If you spot these, DNS is going to break. So make sure you pay attention. Flag these ones. If your log monitoring system allows you to flag specific event IDs and send you emails based on them, make sure these ones are flagged and it tells you straight away. Now, these are concerning ones. So if you see them occurring, you want to do further investigation and find out what is going on. I'm really sorry to have to say you have to monitor all of your security event logs. I'm so sorry. If you're anything like my organization, ours roll over every 4 to 6 hours. It is a massive log. Because you're not going to be paying attention to it every 4 hours, how many of you are up at 1 o'clock in the morning so that before 5 a.m. you actually pay attention to it? None of you. Put it into a logging system. Make sure you've got it stored somewhere. So you're looking for any suspicious behavior. You're looking for repeated access attempts, admin accounts doing things they shouldn't, anything that makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. As an admin, chances are you know your environment pretty well. You know what to pay attention to. Now, your directory service log, you have to monitor all of that, but luckily it's a little bit smaller than your security log, so it's a little bit nicer to have to monitor. What you're looking for, again, is any warnings or errors that are coming up, particularly anything coming from your KCC, so your Knowledge Consistency Checker, or from your NTDS. You want to make sure that any events that are flagged from them, you pay attention to them. Now, you don't necessarily have to be a domain administrator to access these logs. At the end of this talk, I'm going to have a link that points off to my blog that goes through all the steps you need to do, and trust me, there is a lot of steps, but it means that you don't have a service account sitting in your domain admins group, because that's bad. You want to get that out, so you can actually set this up so that any of your logging systems can pull these logs without needing to be a domain admin. Now, this came about from the last time I ran this talk, and someone suggested I should include it in. So the last three slides aren't going to be of any use to you if you haven't got the right switches turned on in your environment. So you want to set up your advanced audit policies in order to be able to get those events showing up in your event logs. So you want to enable these, and you want to enable the right ones for you. You want to make sure you're seeing the right event logs coming in and seeing the right event IDs. Now, Microsoft has a post that they've done on how you can go about setting this up. It's great. However, one of the things that I noticed that they were lacking on is a correspondence between which advanced audit policies correspond with which event IDs, because obviously it's the event IDs you're actually interested in. So I've done a really nice table, again, a link to my blog, that will correlate between the two. So it'll say, this is the advanced audit policy you need to turn on in order to be able to see these event IDs in your event log. Now, I did touch on this one slightly in the event logs one, but it does need a little bit more of a focus. So the whole idea of this is you're looking for things like account lockouts, you're looking for failed logon attempts, you're checking for the additional removal from specific security groups. These are useful in not only diagnosing issues and spotting things before they become a problem, but also making sure that, you know, you're making your users feel nice and warm and fuzzy. So I did touch on this a little bit with the security log monitoring, but it's not just for security. As I said, users really get a kick out of someone paying attention to them. So it's really cool to say, hey, I noticed your account's locking out repeatedly against our exchange servers. Do you happen to have a mobile device that's connecting in that you haven't changed the password on since you last reset your password? Happens all the time. Users feel really nice when they get personalized service of someone going, oh, they're actually paying attention, that's really nice. Yes, you can help me with that. Even better is when they go, well, no, I don't have a mobile device. I haven't used that account in like a month. I don't know what's going on. So you've spotted a security event possibly before it's become bigger. Now, you also want to keep an eye not just on your account lockouts, but also your failed logon attempts. So any failed logon attempts, they're usually the precursor to your account lockouts. That's great. But attackers are getting smarter. So they're paying attention to whatever your account lockout policy is. So say you've got an account lockout policy of 10. Attackers are now trying that account 9 times and then stopping. So you don't see the account lockout when it occurs. You're only seeing failed logon attempts. So pay attention to those, particularly administrative accounts. This one's really handy in being able to spot people that are trying to do the wrong thing. Now, this will vary on how you have your admin accounts set up. So it's something you're going to want to check regularly. Now, as I mentioned in security, you're going to want to keep your enterprise admins and your schema admins group empty. And if you're following Microsoft best practice that, you know, they only recently changed because they like screwing with me, domain admins as well. So hopefully you did go to Oren's session before about the just-in-time and just-enough administration. But one of the other things you want to do is check other groups and make sure people aren't being added in or removed from them. So you've got your enterprise admins, your schema admins, and your domain admins, but you've also got things like your administrators, and your backup operators, and your event log readers. These are things that can do stuff on your domain controllers that you probably don't want someone doing without your knowledge. Now, you may also have other groups set up in your organisation, say a group that can access all of your workstations and has admin rights on all your workstations. Monitor that. Make sure random people aren't being added in. Make sure normal user accounts are not going into that group. Only desktop admins. Remember all the stuff I talked about before? Only desktop admins. The other ones that you want to pay attention to, so if you're running Exchange in your environment, you've got your organizational, I think it's organization management group. And then if you're running Skype or Link, you've got your CS administrators and your RTC universal user admins. Pay attention to those as well, because they are things that can do damage. Now, running the commands I've shown you and checking the event logs and doing all that, it's a good way to be able to make sure that everything's in check and make sure that everything's running smoothly. However, sometimes we inherit environments. We come into an organization and we're like, I have no idea what's broken. I have no idea what's working, what's good, what's bad. I need to find this out in a hurry. So do I have the command for you? This is the quick and dirty way to find out what's going on in your AD from a whole point of view. Now, the slash C, really important. This is comprehensive. It runs all the things, and it's a huge output that it puts out. So you want to pay attention. This really does test everything in your domain. So I have some screenshots of me running this in my test domain. It's split up over multiple slides because it's a big output. So you run this command, it starts gathering some information, does some initial connectivity tests. Everything's looking good so far. As you can see up there, passed test. That's what you want to see. Failed bad, passed good. Yay, more passed. This is a test environment. Of course it's going to pass. Nothing's broken in it because no one's using it. A couple of things to show up here. So the DFSR event one, this one's actually really cool. We've noticed in the past that you will see this one fail. So you've got to go and check the DFSR event log and find out what's going on there. Chances are the event ID, the time that it's happening, will correspond with your backups. So if you take a look and the event ID that's showing up and the time that it's coming up is at the same time as your backups, it's probably pretty safe to ignore it. The other one is the SysVol, so the SysVol check. This one's really cool. It just likes throwing information crap in there. It'll fail, and it's informational. Learn which ones are safe to ignore. There are a couple, but there are a few that you do need to pay attention to. Yay, even more passed. So anything that doesn't pass, that's something you're going to want to look into further. So that's going to be checking your event logs, running the commands that I've listed here, poking your DNS, making sure everything's connecting right, all that kind of stuff. Now, you can run this as part of your script if you want. I personally prefer running this one manually, say, every 3 to 6 months, just as a nice output to make sure everything's working right. Management really like it when you can give them one of these and go, look, everything passed. Aren't I awesome? It's like a little nice checkbox. You're doing a good job. So one that I recommend that you run fairly infrequently, but do it manually. Cloud. Ooh. So I thought I'd end with the cool new stuff so that, you know, some of you don't end up falling asleep. If you have your Active Directory connected to Azure AD, there are a few things that you need to be doing to check to make sure that A, the connection is connecting, and B, that things are working properly. So if your AD is connected to Azure, chances are you have an AADC server, so an Azure Active Directory Connect server, and it's going to be running your Synchronization Service Manager. It's a pretty GUI. I like GUIs. Pointy clicky, that's all good for me. So it's a really handy GUI to give you some information on how things are running. So after your first initial sync, you're going to get 6 items per sync. So you're going to end up with an export, a Delta sync, and a Delta import, one for your internal... Items are going to be for your internal, and 3 of them are going to be for your Azure. Thank you very much. I kill batteries because I talk so much. So, everything should be status equals success. That's what you want to see. However, there are a few things that you want to pay attention to. So, as part of your Delta sync for your internal domain, check any flow errors that are appearing. Make sure you're paying attention to them. For your .on.microsoft.com domain, you want to be checking not just the flow errors, but also the connection status, because you kind of want it to be connecting. For your Delta import, you want to be checking your sync errors, and also check the connection status for your own domain, because it's the opposite, of course. Now, for your export, now this is a really cool one that we have in ours. So you want this to be status equals success unless you have a DUD account that you're using as like the canary to make sure that everything's working. So we have this special little account that we know will never synchronize up. It's just not going to do it. We're not going to be able to export it. But it lets us know that the synchronization is successful and it is working and it is detecting accounts that aren't exporting properly. Now, the other one to pay attention to here, as you'll see that I've got listed up there, you want to check your Office 365 organization profile and make sure you have a technical account contact listed. This is the email address that any errors are going to get sent to. Make it a group account so more than one person gets these, please. So that's probably going to be your identity team. You want to make sure that any sync errors are actually being sent off and someone is paying attention to them. Now, as I mentioned in security, you do not want to be using any passwords from your organization to access Office 365 and Azure. Make sure the passwords are totally different. Set up MFA. Just never the twain shall meet, okay? Now, I've only just started playing with this just a little bit. Azure Active Directory Connect Health, it's really pretty. Yes, it does require Azure AD Premium, but it's really pretty. So it requires an agent to be run on each individual server, but for monitoring, it's a really good way of keeping a nice overview to make sure that everything's working. Your domains, your domain controllers, ADFS servers, your AADC sync, all of that is working right. Green is good, yellow not so good, red bad. Management get that. They understand it. So out of the box, it requires very little configuration. So we've literally gone, that's the agent, connect up here, and things start appearing. It's really lovely. So the link that I've got up there, it gives you a little bit more information on Azure AD Connect Health, how you can go about setting it up, how much it costs, that kind of stuff. So I'm really sorry. I hope you guys can see some of that. This is what I see in Azure AD Connect Health for my organisation. I realise there's a lot blurred out. I work for a government organisation over in Australia. We don't like sharing stuff. It's awful. So on the left side here, you'll see that there's stuff about ADFS, healthy, woohoo, and our AADC sync, which is also healthy. Green is good. And a couple of our ADDS domains. So it says we've got 4, but only 2 are showing. But they're both healthy. That's what we want. I only roll with healthy. I'm the one that runs this stuff. Things are working. So on the right side, you've got a close-up view of an individual domain. So I went with our production domain. Makes sense. And it shows a bit more in-depth information about what's going on, alerts, replication stuff, all that kind of thing. Please note the functional level up there. It says 2012 R2. I did that. That's what I spent 6 months of my life doing last year. All of our domains are on domain functional level 2012 R2. And then they brought out Server 2016. I'm like, oh crap, now I have more work. So this is a really nice report. Management loves seeing this stuff. Green good, red bad. Also really good for displaying on any dashboard TVs you have in your environment to show that things are working, and really good to pay attention to when things stop working. So as I mentioned, there's a few links here. Feel free to take photos. I'll wait. So there's the link off to the stuff about pass the hash. Now, I'm really sorry about the link because Microsoft didn't have a nice short link for me to use, so I had to make it myself. There's a link off there for securing Active Directory and the best practices because Microsoft keep changing stuff on me. Thank you very much. There's the link off to Security Compliance Manager, which is really handy. The one about setting up your advanced audit policies, and a really good post on how you go about setting up LAPs and both the pros and cons. So this is a really good post for you to go off and give to your management to say why you want to do this. I like this slide because this is all mine. So this slide contains links to all the posts that I've discussed in this talk. So there's a post on the Active Directory security stuff that this talk was based on, along with all of the maintenance stuff that I spoke on. There's also a link on how you can set up fine-grained password policies and password setting objects in your environment, the advanced audit policy event ID correlation, and how you can go about setting up your service accounts to get your DC security logs without being a domain admin. So, if you have any questions and you don't want to come up and ask me right now, feel free to contact me. The best way is via Twitter. I am on Twitter way too much, much to the dismay of my boss and husband, but that's fine. You can email me. You can connect via LinkedIn if that's your cup of tea. There's also a link off to my blog that includes a few other posts that may be of interest, so setting up AGPM in your environment or building your own ELK server on a Windows box. Please, please, please evaluate my session. This is my second time speaking ever. So I can't get better if you guys don't give me feedback. Plus, you get to win stuff. Now,